Chapter 45. December 20th of year 18. We put up the tent to one side, because a strong wind is blowing directly through the mountain pass. The air current, which is cooled by the eternal darkness, sweeps past us and into the wide valley of the central plains below us. We designate 8 hours of the never-ending day as night, and enjoy warmth and light one last time. Adam is still sleepy while he gathers the last of our stuff. Eve has disappeared around the corner into the shadow to relieve herself. The scan from orbit shows us that the mountain pass crosses the entire mountain range. How might it have developed? Did a fracture in the planet's tectonic plates spread at this very spot? Had there once been a river flowing through here? Or could the wind alone have created all of this? I hope we can discover the answer along our way. The sides of the mountain pass should indicate whether water, air, or tectonic forces created it. This time I take the lead. I can light up the darkness with my sensors, thus protecting us from surprises.
"Come on, it's just a mountain pass," Adam says.
I won't even discuss letting him go first. The first few meters are very straightforward, and we still can see the entrance of the mountain pass, the only source of light. Further up, the mountain pass walls must bend, because we do not see the sky. The temperature drops rapidly. A moment ago it was 30 degrees, but after 100 meters, it is only 15.
"Turn on your suit heater if you're feeling cold," I recommend.
Yeah, Eve replies. After about 300 meters, we are in complete darkness, and the air becomes even more humid. I activate the lamp on Jay's head.
"Yuck! Do you feel that too?"
"What, Eve?" I ask.
"Something is constantly brushing against my face."
I have to focus my optical sensors more, because so far, I have not noticed anything.
"Yeah, those are hairs," Adam confirms.
I aim the light directly at the mountain pass wall. Something is growing there. I switch to ultraviolet, and the image becomes clearer. Fine hairs are streaming in the wind. Their outer layer looks phosphorescent in the UV light.
"They resemble the plants in the shade biotopes back there," Eve says.
"Yes, this appears to be an adaptation to the solar flares," I say. "While photosynthesis is more efficient, it is also far riskier on Proxima B, because the plants would be exposed to dangerous radiation. A part of the plant life prefers to stay in the shade and live off wind energy."
"Sounds reasonable," Eve says.
I decide this is a good time to take a closer look at the hair plants. Here on the walls of the mountain pass, they seem easy to access. I scratch one from the hard, rocky surface. The plant is really easy to dig out, unlike those in the desert. It's a small wonder they can live here. I inspect it with Jay's visual system from tuber to the top of the hair. It is clearly an individual. The deeper we advance into the mountain pass, the longer and denser the hairs get. I also notice that the vegetation density increases with the atmospheric humidity, which means the hairs probably filter water from the air. Eve's voice reaches me from about 20 steps away.
"Could you wait for a moment?"
She must have fallen behind without me noticing. I stop, and Adam bumps into my back. I turn around and aim the light in Eve's direction. She is hard to see, but appears to be fighting off something with her arms. Adam runs toward her, and I follow him.
"What is going on?" Adam asks nervously. "There's something inside my suit. It itches," Eve radios.
Once I reach her, I scan Eve's body but cannot find anything.
"It can't be helped," I say. "You have to take it off.
Where does it itch?"
"On the side," Eve says,
and pushes a button that opens a special zipper. The upper part of her suit peels off.
"There, just above my hip," she says, pointing.
Jay's hand shoots forward, and I see what Eve is talking about. Inside the hand is an animal, maybe 8 millimeters long, which at first sight resembles an ant. The robot fingers grasp it in such a way that it cannot escape, but so that it will not be injured either. I use a telephoto lens to observe the object. It still resembles an ant, even magnified, but with an important difference.
"Look,
this thing has wheels," I say.
I project an enlarged image onto the rock surface near us. Instead of legs, this little animal has 8 round limbs that seem to be formed of coiled hairs.
Perhaps this developed from the parasite we saw out there, Adam suggests.
The wheels are rotating wildly while I hold the animal. In the middle of the body, there is a capsule with a very strong hair leading into it, and this appears to be the drive mechanism.
It works like a wind-up toy, I explain.
Adam and Eve give me blank stares.
I am referring to a spring mechanism.
Both of them nod.
This strong hair here, I say, marking it on the projected image, is coiled like a spring. The wheels move when the animal unwinds the spring.
But how does it coil the spring?
That's a good question, Eve, I reply, and look around us. Here, almost all surfaces are vertical. If the animal rolls down the wall in reverse, the motion of the wheels should coil the spring. Then it can use the stored tension to climb the walls again.
What about the conservation of energy?
Eve is right. The energy gained from rolling down is not enough. The animal must have an additional mechanism to tension the spring.
We won't be able to discover that here. I would have to run a few tests first, I conclude. Perhaps it is an electrical mechanism, or some kind of muscle. This animal probably feeds on the parasites. That's what it was looking for on your body, Eve.
I hope it didn't find any, she says anxiously. I wouldn't be so sure about that. Sooner or later, our bodies will come in contact with the microorganisms of this world.
Your bodies, that is.
Yuck, that's disgusting, Eve says. Could we go? I'm getting cold, Adam says, sounding impatient.
Eve pulls her suit back on and puts on the helmet.
Good idea, I say. It's probably going to get a lot colder.
We make good progress for the next kilometer and a half. Adam also has his helmet closed. The walls are evenly covered with hairs, as if we were walking through the armpits of a giant.
Look here, says Adam, who is up front in spite of my objections. In the light of his helmet lamp, I see an irregularly shaped area without vegetation. The ground seems untouched, and I examine the area under magnification.
The hairs are shortened down to about 2 millimeters, I explain.
Maybe it's caused by a disease, a kind of hair loss, Eve suggests.
Then the hairs would be all gone. No, an animal was grazing here, Adam interjects.
Which is to be expected, I say. There must be something to cut the hairs now and then, otherwise the mountain pass would be all overgrown.
Something?
Eve's voice expresses both curiosity and awe.
Hard to say what it might look like, or whether it would be a danger to us, I say.
We ought to be careful. It's for good reason that I want to walk ahead of you.
No one says anything for exactly 7 minutes. Then I hear a soft sound behind me, like a whoosh, followed by a shrill scream.
Eve!
I turn around, frantically, colliding with Adam, who is walking behind me and does not react as quickly.
Adam, get out of the way, fast, I command.
He reacts, but does not let me pass. Instead, he runs a few steps in the direction we came from. Then he abruptly stops.
Eve!
He screams. I brighten the beam of my searchlight. Something is lying on the ground. It looks like a huge eyeless bat with 2 triangular wings and a kind of suction mouth. The wings are wrapped around Eve. Only her arm and her hand stick out.
No!
I hear Eve's voice yell. I immediately dim the light. The creature might not like illumination, and I don't want to enrage it. I switch to the radio. It's good that Eve has her helmet on.
Stay completely calm, I say.
I'm try— I hear Eve croak. The weight of the animal seems to be pressing on her chest. Her heart is beating faster, but her vital functions are not alarming.
Reduce stress, the computer prompts.
My own stress level is rising to the maximal value.
The bat seems to be calmly sitting there. Is it wondering what to do with its prey? Should it digest it right away? Or might it be better to tear off pieces to feed to its offspring?
I am terribly worried about Eve and have to force myself not to act impulsively.
Adam shares my concern.
He raises his hand and appears to be ready to attack the thing.
No, Adam,
I tell him via the helmet radio. I myself am surprised that he stops. I switch to infrared to watch the bat without disturbing it, but Eve immediately calls out, "No!" The animal does not seem to like infrared either. What about the ultraviolet range? Now the alien bat looks phosphorescent. This clearly shows how its suction mouth searches Eve lying below it, presumably to find food. Since her suit and her helmet are closed, I do not see any immediate danger for her, no matter how scary the situation might look. "Eve, it is just licking you. Don't worry," I say, attempting to reassure her.
"Very heavy,"
Eve pants. The biomonitor calms me down a bit, reporting the oxygen saturation of her blood has hardly decreased. She is getting enough air. "Still, don't move," I say, trying to hide my fear from Eve. She must not do anything rash. "Nothing is going to happen to you. Trust me," I say calmly, and can see the animal is pulling its left wing from underneath Eve. At its end is a very long bone that seems to end in a point, and appears to be a very effective weapon if needed. Adam seems to have noticed this detail as well, and moves toward Eve. I grab his shoulder with the robot arm. He twists and turns to get away. "No, Adam, if that animal wants to attack, Eve will be dead before you get to her," I reason with him. "Do you want to fight it with your fists? You just would anger it. Just stay calm." "Do something," he yells. "It will be better for Eve if we wait. Safer, I mean. Really, it will. You have to believe me." Adam briefly stops resisting, but I do not fall for his trick and keep holding him back.
"Damn beast,"
we hear Eve mumble. Now the bat pulls out its second wing as well, and there is also a sharp bone at the end of it. Adam once again tries to get away from my grip. The creature now seems to have had enough. It raises its head, extending its long neck, and sniffs in our direction. Does it wonder which one of us to check out next as a potential source of food? The animal lifts its left wing, then the right one, and now I see what the sharp knives are for. It pushes them against the opposite walls of the mountain pass. Like a mountain climber inside a crevice, it pushes itself upward and quickly moves away. I aim my UV searchlight at it, but lose track of the creature. The skin on its lower side does not seem to be phosphorescent. Meanwhile, Adam runs toward Eve, helps her get up, and hugs her tightly. Eve leans against the wall and opens her helmet. Her face is very pale, and she is breathing heavily. The biomonitor tells me she has not suffered any damage. I am glad nothing worse has happened.
"That was..."
She does not finish the sentence. "That was a kind of sheep, a harmless herbivore," I say.
"The thing was terribly heavy. It dropped on me from above."
"In your situation, I would have been scared shitless too," I say. "But I saw its mouth. That thing could not eat you. It probably was just curious. I am sorry it frightened you so much. All of us, indeed."
"That's very reassuring," Eve says, breathing deeply.
But then she turns around and vomits. Adam places a hand on her shoulder and gives her a cloth. "On those wings," he begins to say. I vehemently shake my head to discourage him, but Eve cannot see it. However, Adam ignores me and continues to say, "On those wings, the creature had a kind of knife. I imagined it slicing you open with that." "That would only have happened if you had charged the animal, Adam," I remind him. "I couldn't just stand around while it was suffocating Eve," he replies angrily. She was in no danger of suffocating. He would have simply provoked the animal by attacking it.
"Don't fight, the two of you," Eve says. "I'm already feeling better. It's over. Let's go."
"Should I carry you for a while?" I ask her.
"No, I'm okay. Besides, I need the exercise," she replies. "Why don't you look around to detect what else might be waiting for us? I don't like surprises like the one we just had."
"I don't think the creature's coming back," Adam says.
"Me neither," says Eve. "But if that was a kind of sheep, how dangerous might the wolves be?"
"How true. If an herbivore was so well armed, the dangers it must be exposed to daily had to be impressive." As if to confirm our fears,
We find some bones on the ground after walking another 400 meters. These are the only remains. The body and the skin of this creature must have either decomposed long ago or been completely devoured by the predator. Adam bends down and picks up a piece of bone about 30 centimeters long. "This must be part of the wing," he says. I see at once that he is right, but I still carefully examine the bone. The structure of the material is unlike the bone structure we are familiar with. I break the bone in the middle and show the fracture to Adam and Eve.
"Did you have to destroy it? We could have used it as a weapon," Adam says.
"Knowledge is much more valuable than such a primitive weapon," I retort. "Look, the material is made up of many air-filled cells. This makes it light and strong. Here at the tip, where the blade is, the cells are especially dense." I brush against the bone, and the material sharpens itself. The creature only has to climb for a while to sharpen its knives. I look at the pile of bones. Unfortunately, it is no longer possible to tell how the individual pieces were once connected. The joints must have rotted faster, or they were also eaten. On the whole, there are 330 bones scattered here, according to the object recognition function of my visual system. This sheep-like creature is a very highly developed animal, and has one-third more bones than a sheep on Earth, I tell them.
"And why are you telling us this?" asks Adam, while giving me a nasty look.
"It's about the mission, the message. We have to understand what happened to the inhabitants here. In order to do that, we must study the natural environment." Adam opens his mouth, but then closes it, turns around, and walks ahead. Eve follows him without saying a word. I want to call them back, but I refrain from doing so because I discover the second knife bone. Adam is right. A weapon might come in handy. I pick up the bone and place it inside Jay's belly. Finally, I scan the area under UV light. I discover about 20 tracks leading away from the pile of bones into all directions, both upward and to the front and back. These must have been left by the scavengers that were responsible for defleshing and dismembering the corpse. For half an hour, we walk in complete silence. We should have reached the end of the mountain pass by now. I stop because I think I can hear a splashing sound ahead. Could that be rain falling on the land outside the mountain pass? The splashing noise comes closer. No, it is more like a mixture of soft slaps and pattering sounds. I imagine a herd of mice, then realize the noise comes from behind us.
"Wait a moment," I call out to Adam and Eve.
That sounds somehow menacing. Might this have something to do with the bones we found earlier? As if on cue, the sound becomes louder. Perhaps the mice are increasing their speed. I aim the UV light at the area behind us and see them. An almost innumerable mob of small animals, slightly bigger than mice, jumping from wall to wall. They must have muscles like frogs and sticky feet like geckos. It is impressive how quickly they can move on only two legs. The animals look like frogs that had their front legs amputated and their mouths sewn shut. At first sight, they do not appear dangerous. Who is afraid of frogs?
"Crazy,"
Adam marvels, while Eve utters a shriek. Both are now near me. The animals are phosphorescent like their larger relatives, and therefore clearly visible in the dark as long as I aim the UV light at them. It is a practical invention of nature to render a part of UV radiation harmless by turning it into visible light. I move the beam up and down. I'm starting to think that the animals are not moving randomly, but instead have selected us as their target. This is confirmed half a minute later. The animal closest to me raises its head. There is an organ in its throat that looks like gills, but contains an elastic band similar to a tongue. This tongue shoots out and moves half a meter in my direction. But because it misses me, it withdraws again. But the second animal hits its target. The pillow-shaped tip of the tongue sticks to the metal of my body. The animal tries to retract its tongue. It is amazingly strong, as measured by my instruments. Because they only weigh a few grams, these alien frogs can only acquire this much force if they are firmly attached to the mountain pass walls.
"Watch out! These guys don't seem to be nice,"
I yell to Adam and Eve. I reach for the animal whose tongue sticks to me and try to remove the creature. It is stuck on the wall too strongly to remove even with my robotic strength. However, the tongue is vulnerable, and I can quickly sever it with my cutting tool. The first animals are reaching Adam, who stands only a meter behind me.
"Run away!" I yell.
But it is too late.
"Ouch! The damned beast!"
Adam screams angrily.
"The thing tore a piece from my suit!"
I toss the knife to him.
"Concentrate just on the tongues. Cut them!"
I shout. Now I know why the sheep creature has two large knives on its wings. However, this had not helped the specimen whose remains had provided us with the knife. I am looking around. More and more frogs are coming out of the mountain pass behind us, and their sheer numbers are frightening. We have to watch that they do not simply overrun us. Adam and Eve are most at risk, as the flexible fabric of their suits cannot hold up against the strength of these animals. My metal armor, on the other hand, is impervious to them.
"Run to the exit," I yell at them. "It can't be far now. I'm going to distract these animals. I can deal with them."
Adam stops for a moment, and then he nods and tosses the knife back at me.
"Come on, Eve, he's right," Adam says. "We have to hurry to get out into the open. These things are dangerous."
They start running. The frogs are focusing on me. To them, I apparently look like the tastiest prey. They do not seem to realize they cannot do anything against my metal armor. I am fighting a lonely battle, but it's okay. This is what I am here for. Adam and Eve won't have to traverse this mountain pass again. Will I really be able to handle these beasts? I do not know. I am working as fast as I can, using the knife to sever all the tongues sticking to me. This causes some confusion, as the specimens with the cut-off tongues are now being attacked by their fellow creatures. And now I witness the upshot. The tips of the tongues rip pieces of skin and flesh from their victims. These pieces disappear into the maws, the gill-like openings of their attackers, and are deposited there. Afterward, the attackers' tongues are again flung at their prey. I can only hope Adam and Eve are safe. A battle zone gradually forms around me, divided into several sections. The animals are attacking me from all sides. While I can reach each part of my body with my knife, moving my right arm from front to back takes a certain amount of time. If during this period two new tongues stick to me, I will fall behind. These things might not be able to take me apart, but they will tie me to the spot. Soon I will not be able to move at all. My mind is racing. There must be spots on Jay's body that are not as sturdy as the rest, particularly the joints. Once the frogs notice this, even though their attacks do not seem very coordinated, they will hit the joints at some time just by pure chance. Am I doomed? Is this the place where my consciousness will be obliterated? This fear paralyzes me. But it's utterly illogical. I'm only hurting myself, just like the infrared light hurt the other creature. Infrared? The frogs live in a dark and cold environment. How might they react to a nice warm bath? I activate my infrared searchlight and beam pure warmth into the mountain pass. Aha! The beasts are reacting. The number of attacks goes down while I notice a high-frequency squeal. A cry of pain? I'm not sorry to inflict pain on them. In fact, it gives me deep satisfaction. You are not going to do that to me, frogs. Not to me. I go into a rage, and my robot arms whirl around as if they have a will of their own. The rear ranks of the creatures are starting to retreat. I cut off the last tongue still sticking to me. Even the animals at the front begin to withdraw. Then I am done. A strange euphoria overwhelms me, consisting of fading battle rage and a sense of deep relief. I will still be able to take care of Adam and Eve. I gaze at the battlefield around me. There must be 100 dead frogs, missing different pieces of flesh that their fellow creatures tore off. I carefully pack away the specimen that seems least damaged in order to examine it more carefully later. Then I hurry toward the exit where Adam and Eve are waiting for me. Eve runs to me and hugs Jay's body. Marchenko, it is good to have you here, Adam says when we reach him.